From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1889 in Poughkeepsie, New York. The Poughkeepsie Railroad Bridge was completed on January 1st of that year, and trains began crossing it. The bridge was the longest bridge in the world at that point, they say, but after a fire, it was taken out of service in 1974. And then in 1992, a big idea was born. Designers and the community decided maybe we could turn that old bridge into the longest footbridge in the world, 212 feet tall, 1.28 miles long. Finally, October 3rd, 2009, the walkway over the Hudson opened as a pedestrian walkway. Last year, used different kind of estimates, but at least 500,000 people crossed it, used it. So why are we looking at a project this hour in Poughkeepsie? Well, tonight, the Community Design Center of Rochester is bringing the project's executive director, I should say, the organization, the Walkway Over the Hudson organization's executive director to Rochester, for a discussion on the Reshaping Rochester series. Are there lessons to be learned that can be applied here? What about different bridges, walkways, the aqueduct, the waterfront? What can we look around in our community and think about applying that we see in Poughkeepsie? So let me introduce our guests for the hour. Elizabeth Waldstein Hart is the executive director of Walkway Over the Hudson organization. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Love everything I've seen so far.
Well, and we've got plenty to talk about with what you are doing down there. Johnny Monroe's here, the executive director of the Community Design Center of Rochester. Nice to see you back.
And nice to be here, Evan.
Jim McIntosh is Rochester city engineer. James, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Johns is a principal landscape architect for Bergman Associates. Mark, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Just in case our listeners are wondering, this is not the legislator. They are different people. I know you heard that, but I'll just get that out of the way one time.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, I tried to get the history the best I could down there, but one of the things we were talking about is the fact that this project happens with Poughkeepsie on one side, and it's not a big city. We're not talking about big cities, big communities that can maybe instantly think of ways to fund a big project, but this was a big, big idea. How did this get done?
Oh, well, how long do we have?
Yeah, right.
Well, you've got the history down pat, so I want you to come with me from now on when I have to talk, and you put it into a nutshell. The history really was 10 years of an idea of some people that just wouldn't let that idea go. People thought it was crazy, it was unrealistic, it wasn't even a good idea, but a part of the seed or the kernel of that was just a group of people that wouldn't let the idea go. And then there was, the confluence of fortuitous events that came together to allow the walkway to happen. But, we can tell more about the story. The organization really reformed in 2003, got fast-tracked with some funding, which you all, I think, are keen on talking about tonight, mm-hmm. and we'll explore more. And then public-private partnership is the story that I get to tell. It was really a small amount of private seed money that then was matched by public funding that took a lot of, advocacy, a lot of support, 5,000 people out on the walkway, and also some early on engineering design work that Bergman Associates were able to do for us. So that was really, a series of things. Yes, this idea is crazy. Oh my gosh, maybe it's not so crazy. It can be done. And what will it cost? And then, oh my gosh, it will cost more to tear down this bridge than it would to build a pedestrian walkway. And then, oh my gosh, there's the quadricentennial and the governor and some people sort of rallying behind it. And, that's the sort of short version of how it came into being.
Well, and that one of those points I think really stands out, which is that there have to be decisions made by communities on what to do with some of these structures, mm-hmm. particularly those not in use. And so we're going to get into price tags, trying to figure out what's a good price to pay on this kind of investment. How do you know you get a return on investment? What would the cost of tearing down be? Mm-hmm. But before we do that, set the scene a little bit for me. I mean, we've now seen some pictures for our listeners who may be at work or online. I'd love for them to see some pictures so they can jump on your website, which
right.
is what?
Walkway.org.
Walkway.org,
yep.
to see what it looks like. But, from the air, it is a beautiful area.
Yeah.
On one side is what? On the other side is what?
Okay, so on the east side, where the railroad tracks come out of New York City to Albany, Poughkeepsie's the last stop on the Metro North, the commuter line from New York City. So Cornelius Vanderbilt was there, you know, a long time ago, buying up all the land and putting the tracks along the river. You know, good news, bad news. Bad news is that there's not a lot of access to the river. Good news is a lot of the viewscape was protected. Mm-hmm. So that is where Poughkeepsie grew and thrived as an industrial center, lots of shipping way back when, and then lots of manufacturing. And then with the huge growth of IBM, became quite a popular and populated area. So that's Dutchess County on the east. As soon as you get out of Poughkeepsie and the adjacent towns, it's quite rural, and then abuts, of course, to Connecticut on the east side of Dutchess County. On the other side of the river, the Hudson River, which is was a huge abyss, you know, for many years, is Ulster County. You've got Woodstock there, you've got the Catskills, so you had a history of a lot of folks coming up, staying at the Catskills over the summer, you know, really just a vacation area. No large cities there. Kingston is the largest city a bit up the river. Where the walkway hits on the west side is a small town of Lloyd and then a bigger community called Highland, but still we're talking, you know, 20,000 people. You know, quite small, a more rural area, and a less organized area, but lots of things happening for many years with the arts, with culture, you know, with theater, with Woodstock, that sort of thing. So those are the two, you know, communities that didn't have as much in common and didn't have a real strong connection.
And now you've got this beautiful walkway, and certainly people in the warm weather months use it. I don't know how much use it gets off season, but give me a sense for, it's a beautiful summer day. Obviously, people want to check out views and whatnot.
Right.
But are they going from one side or the other? Are they going to either stop and eat or do other things once they cross?
Right. So it's for the listeners to try and imagine it. It's 200 feet, you know, above. So that's like 21 stories above the river.
Yeah.
So when you're out on the walkway on the bridge, you're seeing way down almost to Bear Mountain to the south towards New York City, and then you're turning around and you're looking north up the Hudson River. So you have this incredibly unique, really unique, one-of-a-kind view of being right up over the river, looking both north and south, looking east and west, seeing the Catskills, seeing Hunter Mountain and Windham. You're actually seeing some of the ski resorts, you know, farther beyond. And then you're seeing where it curves and starts making its way south down sort of into New York City. And so when you're up there as a visitor, you can be there during the week, and it's peaceful and it's calm and it's always different. It can be windy, it can be sunny, it can be raining, it can be snowing. There can be ice flows with the tugs, you know, cutting through the ice on the river. So one of the most unique and wonderful things about the walkway over the Hudson is it's always different. So you can spend 2 hours and you can really walk from one side to the other, look around, enjoy it. You can spend 3 hours, you can read all the different, signs that tell different information. You can read it on your smartphone. Mm-hmm. You can really get into the history of the bridge. You can have that experience. So you really find people up there doing a variety of different things. The locals, like us, there's a hardcore group of locals that are up there day in, day out, walking primarily for exercise or for peace of mind, you know, whatever it leads us to go out into nature for some solace. And that's a group of, you know, 20, 30,000 people that are routinely using the bridge over and over. And then in the middle section, we have another 100 to 250,000 people a year that are coming really from about a 60-mile radius. Mostly New York, but also Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. And then you have at the far end, you have people that we've documented just on weekends from 42 countries coming from around the world. And those are the real, real tourists. We are really trying to get that international tourist out of New York City. But routinely people coming from Albany, coming from Burlington, coming from different places. And we know this because we do surveys. We have students and volunteers out there almost every weekend taking surveys at asking people where they come from. For the economic impact survey, we interviewed 2,000 of the visitors on the walkway. So we're starting to get some pretty good data on who's coming from where, what are they doing. And then, yes, we hope, and we're part of what our mission is now that people will hear more about tonight, is getting folks off the walkway into restaurants, into shops, you know, going to the other sites, going to the Culinary, going to Franklin Roosevelt, going to Historic Huguenot, you know, going to Dia Beacon, you know, looking in the region and saying, okay, well, I've done this walkway, now what can I do?
How do you access the walkway?
You access the walkway from either the east. In Poughkeepsie, there's two entrances. One is Washington Street, which is off not a busy, but a city street, a city/residential street. And there's parking there. There's both state park parking and there's on-street parking. Or you can go a little bit further up that road and go into a parking lot. That entrance is walkable from the Metro North train station. It's easily accessed off Route 9, which is the sort of corridor that goes up and down the river in that part of the Hudson Valley. And it's not too far off the Taconic, which is what a lot of folks use. And it's you know, maybe 5 miles from most of the major gateways that you would enter Poughkeepsie or enter Dutchess County. On the west side, then a lot of the folks are coming off the Thruway, coming off 87 onto Route 9 and then onto the entrance on the west side, which is in the town of Lloyd.
And already Bill wants to know if there's a cost to walk across.
It's free. There's a cost, of course, to the state parks that run the park and to us that run all the programs. But part of the federal funding, the requirement for the funding was that it would be free. There's a charge for parking, and that's one of the ways state parks, you know, cover some of their operational cost. And then we do all sorts of wonderful, you know, fundraising activities and 4th of July fireworks and a gala in October. Our first ever marathon will be in June. So we do a number of things to raise money, but day in, day out, there's not a cost to use the walkway.
All right, so you're getting a sense for what the walkway over the Hudson in Poughkeepsie is like and some of the history behind it from Elizabeth Waldstein Hart, who's the executive director of Walkway Over the Hudson organization there. But she's here for a specific reason. We're talking about reshaping Rochester. Tonight, 7 o'clock at the Gleason Works Auditorium, she's giving a presentation called Crossing Over. And Johnny Monroe, I know tickets are $15. If people want to check it out tonight, how do they do that?
They can come to the door and buy tickets there or online at rrcdc.org. We have students come free and senior citizens come for a reduced rate. So we're selling tickets right up until the lecture tonight.
Okay, and so again, that's tonight, 7 o'clock at Gleason Works mm-hmm. Auditorium. Now, you guys have to look around and say, who do we want to bring in to talk about different projects, ideas, how it's worked in their community, what can be applied. When you look at Walkway Over the Hudson, what do you look at in Rochester that makes you think we can learn from this, we can do something like
this? Well, it's interesting. I was explaining earlier, because we try to, when people come in, and this is Elizabeth's first time in Rochester, and we try to explain how we put together the series itself. And so we never know until just before we are putting together a schedule in July what the theme is going to be. And this year's theme is corridors. And so we were looking at various kinds of corridors, river corridors, roadways, reused railroad corridors, etc., and looking at Rochester at things like the El Camino Trail. And how that, Rochester really as a framework right around our river. When you think about it, all of our Olmsted parks, for the most part, are found along the river as an armature. And then we have all of these interesting trails that intersect. And what we seem to lack is an overall orchestrated approach to how these things get redeveloped. So by having Elizabeth come in and others come in to talk about how they have redeveloped various corridors in their particular areas, it helps to give us ideas. It doesn't say, it isn't to be viewed as a sort of something we have to be defensive about, because we all in all communities and all of the people that come in learn a tremendous amount about our approach to things, what we've done right, where we've made mistakes. And by doing that as human beings, you know, we are able to share those things and they transfer information across communities. So already I think Elizabeth would agree that we've learned a lot from her. She's learning a lot from us. And so she'll become sort of an ambassador for Rochester, as we're going to be now enticed to go and cross the river on this beautiful bridge project. So that's kind of the sum total of where we're going with the series.
And before I kick it over to Jim and Mark, because there are certain things that I want to hear their ideas about, but let me just try to cover some ground quickly on the numbers here. Is there a total price tag that now you look back and you say, okay, here's what we had to raise or generate to build this project?
Yeah, we used $38 million as sort of the, you know, a general price tag. Mm-hmm. There's another $3 or $4 million onto that. 42 is really with the elevator, sort of what we generated.
Okay.
About a third of that is private. About two-thirds of it, or most of the rest is government, half of that, sorry, about a third of the total price was generated privately, and then the state came in a big way, and then federal funding as well. So it's really a combination of all those sources.
So about two-thirds, so, you know, roughly $25 million
yep,
or so.
Right, between federal and state.
Federal yes. and state sources. And do you recall or do you know, often when we look at big projects, Rochester has a history with projects, and sometimes they pan out exactly as you want, and sometimes they don't. But people are always curious if the final budget or final number looks like the initial projections. Did this stay largely in line?
No, and Mark can talk about that, I think, a little bit. Or if not, you know, the original projection was about $25 million. And then when the studies were done, the bridge was going to be 10 feet wider. It was going to be, I think, 36 feet wide for the whole bridge, and we brought it into 26, but we have bump outs now. The railings took up some of that. So there was a lot of things that, you know, sort of we had to deal with during the construction and during the final design phase. So, no, it didn't turn out right, but it was the commitment was so strong by then. Mm-hmm. And there was confidence, even though we hadn't raised $38 million, you know, the confidence that we had a commitment from the state for that we didn't know would be 20, but ended up being up to 20. And even though the private funding was only I say, you know, $11 million initially, that gave everybody a lot of confidence that, you know, we'd be able to finish the whole project.
And I'm also curious, just given the fact that the number $42 million or so
yep.
at the
yep.
elevators, I think that is exactly the price of Rochester's Fast Ferry, if I remember correctly. So some people hear that number and they think, is it worth it to spend this kind of money?
Right.
So briefly, if a teardown for that kind of a project, the
right.
old Poughkeepsie Bridge,
right.
what was the idea for what a teardown would
it
cost?
It was $50 million for
$50
the teardown.
$50 million to
teardown. Yeah, $54 million was the teardown.
Okay, and then some will say, okay, $50 million to tear down, $42 million to build the walkway project, but there are maintenance costs, et cetera.
Right.
So how do you make sure going forward it's a project that, you know, stays largely effective and,
right.
and efficient?
Well, one of the things that I'm so pleased was done early on, even before I was involved, was a feasibility study by Camoy & Associates. And we based that roughly on 250,000 users a year, looked at bed tax, look at some property tax, look at sales revenue. What would that number of people generate in the region? And the figure that we came up with that we have verified 3 years later is about $24 million a year. So the impact... And we're not talking about the very indirect impact of the international tourists that stay in the area. We don't know how many go to FDR exactly. We don't know how many go to DIA. But we know people are spending longer in the area. And we know for Dutchess County, at least, tourism is our biggest industry right now. It's overtaking agriculture and manufacturing. So we know that we're contributing positively to that. So if you have that price tag, but you have $24 million at least being generated annually in the various you know, economic impact, you're doing pretty well. We will update those studies. We will keep promoting mixed use, you know, improved development. I mean, we have that very much in similar
yes.
as a similarity with Rochester, is that there's great potential up and down the river mm-hmm. and the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, you know, has not come to fruition for a variety of reasons. But we keep focused on the fact that the walkway did happen. We did get it done. People, you know, do celebrate that this one wonderful asset is sitting here now. And some of the other pieces, yeah, there's more pieces of the puzzle that need to be put together. But there's confidence that that was done. And I've seen wonderful things that have been done here, whether it's your trails or the pedestrian bridge or the city center that has new housing. And so, you know, somehow communicating that those pieces, you know, those pieces are happening.
Yes.
you're just joining us, we're talking about the walkway over the Hudson, which is the tallest pedestrian walkway in the world. Is that right, Elizabeth?
Well, you know, maybe? It is the, the longest.
The longest.
But now we have to say the longest elevated one, because okay. in China, there's a bridge that's 10 feet above the water. It's more like an elevated walkway, and it's longer.
Okay.
And the Chinese found us and pointed that out. And we have dutifully stopped calling it the longest
pedestrian
bridge in the world.
Well, certainly one of the tallest
and the longest.
It's 212 feet high, 1.28 miles long, that opened in October of 2000. And again, if you're just joining us, that's down in Poughkeepsie. It's called the Walkway Over the Hudson, and it is the project that replaced the old Poughkeepsie Railroad Bridge that, after a fire, went out of service in 1974. And so when we look around Rochester, the question is, Jim McIntosh, as city engineer, do you look around Rochester and maybe not say same scope, same scale, but where do you think these kind of lessons apply?
Well, certainly along the river, we have, you know, we've had a long history of turning our back on the river, which we've been changing over the last, 30 to 40 years. And so there are certainly opportunities as part of that El Camino Butterhole Trail. We end up having to purchase these rail tracks, and the bridges that are associated. So just north of the Pend'Oren Bridge is a large bridge that is in rough shape that, crosses the river that we would like to, do something with. And I think, one of the things that Elizabeth, brings is that sometimes a champion comes from within City Hall, sometimes it comes from the community, but every project needs a champion. And whether that's the mayor or someone on staff who gets the administration to push that, all these projects, when they do end up happening, there's some champion who keeps their foot on the pedal, because there's always a lot of competing, needs for the funds, so whether they're fates state, federal, private, and the El Camino Trail came together that way with, private funding and funding from Kodak and state funding. Mm. So that's kind of the lesson. But certainly here we have, if it's not that bridge, it's finishing up the hard parts of our connections of the walkways through the city along the river. We kind of got most of the easy ones done, but, we have to get around Thomson Reuters and the Convention Center and through the park, and then, in that nasty section between the Interloop and High Falls, mm-hmm. it would be nice to get those, get that continuous corridor done so that both bikers and walkers would have a route through the city that didn't involve them having to get, and a continuous route through the city that didn't involve having to get out onto the city streets to make it to the next section of the trail.
And again, you heard Elizabeth mention that the decision down there was not just about what would be a valuable asset, but what you do with something that could be more expensive to take down. And when we look at our infrastructure, Jim, how concerned are you about old infrastructure that is inevitably going to need either repair, replacement, or destruction?
Well, that's certainly the bridge, that I speak about that's that came with that Butterhole Trail purchase is one of those. It's, it's a wood, structure, and, we had an evaluation done even just to keep it, keep it safe from being, from falling apart mm-hmm. while we wait to get funding for it is a couple $100,000. And so, and if it falls into the river at some point, that cleanup, because it'll be an emergency mm-hmm. basis and all those kind of things, will be expensive. We haven't really estimated that. Versus the cost of doing something new, but that's probably a good idea. I'm getting to think about doing that, because that's just another way that we can push that kind of idea.
Mark Johns is the principal landscape architect for Bergman Associates. You look at that project now down there in Poughkeepsie; they have a lot of pride in it there, and I think for good reason. When you look at the final product now, what was especially done well that we can learn from here, Mark?
Well, I think the nonprofit, Elizabeth's group, mm-hmm. Is one of the main pluses for that project. Yeah, it was a great bridge. We could see in the beginning, as designers, we could see what a gem it was, even in the rough. It spanned the water. It also spanned a good part of the land on the Poughkeepsie site, so you not only had the experience over the water and looking at the Hudson Valley and the vegetated corridor, but also being above the rooftops, basically floating in the air. It's a floating park. So we could see that already and knew that was going to be a great thing. But having the community support and really behind it, programming it now to keep it alive. That's, I think, one of the best results of the project.
Yeah, and by the way, I think Bergman sent over. What was the network that we saw that work on Vince?
That was the DIY network.
The DIY network followed the work that was being done, which, you know, any construction has its dangers, but Mark, this was a pretty interesting project, wasn't it? On that scale,
it was very challenging, and I, you know, my hats are off to all those guys that worked on that. And you know, it's not an ordinary construction site. Every day there was fall hazard and big falls. It was not your typical project. So everything, and it was designed, you know, with that in mind as well. So it was very challenging and different, if you will, because of all the conditions that we had and knew that the contractor was going to face during the construction, and trying to design it so that it could be built in progression and safely, and then they could use that to continue the construction.
Yeah,
as they went along.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you what I asked Jim then. Look around Rochester, and again, it may not be the same scale, but the lessons that we think we can apply here immediately come to mind for you are where?
Well, as Jim had mentioned, that remnant bridge from the El Camino, the Butterhole line, mm-hmm. that we kind of dubbed it the mini walkway because obviously we worked on the walkway.
Yep.
And, it's a very similar project, only in a very micro scale. So that would be, you know, that would be our walkway. And it also would offer us, the Rochesterians and tourists, a different vantage point of the river, because right now all the other bridges cross flatter portions of the river. This one is really in a wild, and it's in the gorge, the rock cut area. So it's really a geological wonder there. So it could offer something different than the other footbridges or vehicular bridges over the river.
All right, we're going to get a short break in, and we're going to come back and answer some of your questions if you want to join the conversation. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. In studio is Elizabeth Waldstein Hart, who is the Executive Director of Walkway Over the Hudson Organization down there in Poughkeepsie, Mark Johns, the Principal Landscape Architect for Bergman Associates, Johnny Monroe, the Executive Director of the Community Design Center of Rochester, and Jim McIntosh is Rochester's City Engineer. Tonight at 7 p.m. at Gleason Works Auditorium, Elizabeth is presenting not only on their success, but some of what we can learn and think about in our own community. $15 at the door if you want to attend tonight at 7 o'clock at Gleason Works Auditorium. Short break, and get to some of your questions next on Connections. All right, before we get to your phone calls, it's important that we mention another idea that mm-hmm. is really taking shape in Rochester, Johnny, and that's Greentopia.
Yes, and we took Elizabeth to meet at the Greentopia offices in High Falls and to view the project, and Louis Stess and Michael Phillipson were very gracious in sharing a wonderful presentation about what they're championing for. And as Jim just pointed out in a short conversation in our break, that this is a case where you really have a local champion from the community that's working very, very steadily, foot after foot, to make some significant changes and draw attention to the gorge area.
Yeah. Jim, when you mentioned that you thought for years our area has sort of neglected the river and neglected the water property we have here, do you look at Greentopia and other things that are happening and see change?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, prior to them getting here, even with the investment that the Johnson administration made in getting people over here and trying to set that up as what started out to be an entertainment district, but has been a raging success as a place to live in the city. A lot of people didn't realize we had a 60-foot waterfall right in downtown. You drive
isn't,
over
isn't it. Isn't it remarkable that, yeah. I mean, and look, I was one of those people I think was here for a number of years before I was right down there. Didn't use it, didn't see it very often.
Right, and so I think what the group Greentopia is doing is bringing, you know, attention, more attention to that through, you know, their plan to try and have this walkway that goes, you know, kind of in a circle around that neighborhood. And right now, they're, as Johnny said, they're going through the right steps. They're doing a planning study to see, you know, what's the feasibility of putting another pedestrian walkway kind of right at the, you know, top of the falls somewhere. And this is why I said, you know, this connection of this area, you know, that's right behind us here at the studio and downtown through this walkway along the river, you know, that's an important piece of that. And they're helping to bring some focus to that.
Let me get to the phones, and this is Ed in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, I'm a native Poughkeepsian, born in Vassar Hospital. Did a lot of my education in the High Park School District, but parents moved, and I graduated from Poughkeepsie High School and then Dutchess Community College.
Oh, wow.
So I was very interested to hear that you were going to be on today, and I remember a walk across the bridge, or at least halfway across the bridge, right after it was turned into a walkway. It was pretty awesome because I don't know what it's like now, but, you know, you could walk and look over the rail, and there's all this great river and space and such, and I'm glad to hear that it's being developed. I vaguely remember when it was a train track.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for calling, and you have to come back and visit again. It's spectacular. A lot of people have stories. One of the things that I talk about the walkway a lot is that it's created a new community, something we didn't envision. We didn't realize that it would be a community of people coming from Ulster, coming from Dutchess, people like yourself that have lived in Poughkeepsie all these years, saw that bridge up there, remember the trains going across, remember the fire, had their father or their parent or someone that worked on it or was teenagers snuck on it at night. I'm sure you never did that, Ed, but there are people that did that. So I'm, you know, thanks for calling in. It's a great success story. It's brought a renewed sense of pride to a lot of people in the Mid-Hudson region because we have something spectacular to offer. And I think that's one of the things that Poughkeepsie's going to take from this. You know, I'm impressed with some of the things you've accomplished here, and you don't see them because you take them for granted, but generating that sense of pride and accomplishment of what's here, and then, you know, keeping that vision of life alive that of what can be added to that and what can be accomplished is a great thing. So
844-295-TALK if you want to join the program, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. A couple of comments on Twitter, at Evan Dawson. Honey writes to us, I've been there in Poughkeepsie. It's beautiful. We have the Platt Street Bridge walkway, but the view can never match it. Alex has a question, and then I think I'll start with Jim on this. But before Alex's question, just to kind of remind our listeners, Poughkeepsie is 32,000 people, right?
We're with the, you know, adjacent communities, but the whole area is not more than, you know, 80,000-90,000 people. That's pretty much it.
And on the other side, what's the name of the community on the other side?
Lloyd and Highland.
Small?
Yeah, maybe 20,000 in that whole area that's closest to the walkway.
Okay, so we're not talking about really large municipal communities that put the will into a project that ended up, you know, went from about a $25 million price tag to 40 plus. And so Alex writes, does Rochester have the appetite for a big multi-million dollar project like this? Jim, I think it's a good question. I know you don't have all the answers to that, but how would you address that?
Sure. We're always looking for that. It's always this issue of, you know, how do we put the pieces together to fund these projects? But, you know, we certainly, you know, we have an appetite. You know, we're doing the Interloop project now. We've done quite a few of these, you know, large budget projects, large for, you know, our region. You know, even though it's a, you know, a metro area, we do these. But I think you know, would we do, you know, would we like to take on that bridge? Certainly. Are we looking, you know, for funding? Yes. And we keep applying to, you know, through the combined funding applications at the regional council and those kind of things for these kind of projects. And yes, we're, you know, we have done a couple of projects lately, Midtown, you know, the port and the Interloop that we would dream about doing in a 10-year period. But, you know, those are all, you know, funded and ongoing. So, you know, we're looking for the next big challenge.
There's an actual rule on this program that if Jim comes in, we cannot go an hour without mentioning the Interloop. but as Jim has cautioned us in the past, filling the Interloop is filling a third of the Interloop, right? The eastern third.
Yep.
And we've seen some compaction work, by the way, going on from what I could tell, right? A lot of fill going in there now.
Yes, and the utilities are working up on the street level, you know, moving things. This morning, the Broad Street Bridge closed, and so that'll be closed until they bring the soil up to that level, and then once that happens, we can close the other pieces. But yes, the work is beginning, and the contractor's back on the scene after an extremely tough winter where he really wasn't able to do much of anything.
Yeah, and so part of Jim's point there is that there are projects underway that are happening. And so, Johnny, to Alex's question, do you think our community has the appetite for projects like this?
I think they do. I think that, as we've all pointed out, that this is a public-private partnership kind of a deal. You've got to have some community ownership and spirit for projects wherever they're happening. And I think it is impressive that we have these these projects all going on at the same time now. And there's opportunity then to build on those. For instance, the Interloop, there are those of us in a camp I sit in that would like to see the entire Interloop go away. We think that that could happen, that it could exist at grade and be a much greater contributor to the overall city grid, providing more connections that we are constantly bemoaning we don't have. So this is a beginning of a very exciting era for Rochester, and I hope to see these things come to pass.
Elizabeth Waldstein-Hart, again, the executive director of the Walkway Over the Hudson organization. When you look at the history of what developed down there, were there any unexpected surprises? I mean, you talk about the price tag moving, and that's common in big projects
right,
like this,
right.
But any other unexpected surprises that were sort of cautionary tales?
Cautionary tales. Your public officials change.
Yeah,
governors,
that's a good point.
Are removed from office in the middle of your project. things happen. So you have to just be a little bit nimble. You have some champions and supporters, and sometimes they don't remain with you, you know, for various reasons that are way beyond your control. You have a city government that, you know, is term limited, so you may have a champion there that's going to be out of office. So that the private public of Diana Gurrieva from the Dyson Foundation, who was the primary sort of really mover behind the whole project, we did a presentation to the State Association of Foundations, and it was interesting for me to hear her talking to other foundations about how difficult it was for them to work with the public sector and what she learned from it. You know, it's they're driven by something different, you know, and people get appointed, get elected, and it's just the reality of it. So that was one of the interesting stories. The other cautionary tale, which I would, which you do want to think of, is even, you know, after it opened and 40,000 people showed up that first weekend, we were blown away, had no idea that, you know, people would come, although we had worked our tails off to get it in the press and to cover it. And, you know, it wasn't an accident that a lot of people knew about the project and what was going on. There were still people that said, this isn't worth it. This was a waste of money. So you have to be ready for that. I meet people in my role, leading businessmen of the communities there and of the Hudson Valley, that come up to me even now and say, you know, I got to tell you, Elizabeth, I wasn't for that project. I thought it was a big waste of money. I didn't understand, you know, that was going to benefit us. And almost to the person, they say, you know, I was wrong. I'm so glad I was wrong. It worked, and I see the benefit it's bringing. I see the potential. So I think that's one of your cautionary tales. There will be people up to the bitter end that, you know, will want to do something else. And one of the things I say when I'm out talking to the community, and often you have a group of people that just don't want change, and I really try and say to them, what is it that you want? Okay, you don't want change. What do you want? So you don't want the bridges connect, and you don't want people to come to the waterfall, and you don't want the, you know, the road elevated. You know, what do you want for Rochester? What is your vision? I always try and turn it around and say, okay, what do you want?
It's not always an easy question to answer.
No.
and by the way, the governor, Governor Spitzer, you know, you probably don't factor in a 20-year plan,
right.
interstate prostitution schedules.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's probably just not something in the original plan. But opened in October of 2009. And before I get to our next listener's question, do you remember? So you obviously remember what it was like that opening.
And Governor Patterson was there.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped right in. And, you know, Carol Ash, a lot of the people at the state parks were the same. Congressman Hinchey was there, Senator Schumer. So a lot of the people that were instrumental in helping both at the federal and the state level were there. And many of those individuals aren't there now, but and many of them are. So we go to Albany. We visit all our reps. You know, we talk about the walkway. You know, just keep it going to the next group of public officials.
Sure. And Jim, by the way, other members of the Warren administration have been in this studio in recent months talking about even issues as, well, you would think parking is this esoteric thing, but we could do 3 hours on parking. Everyone wants to talk about it.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that we're starting to hear a conversation, especially in this city government, that says, we must have a plan that will look past whatever this administration is. Because if you don't, that's how you don't, you know, end up with a long-term vision.
Absolutely.
And do you hear that in City Hall?
Sure. I'm on that parking committee, and I think, you know, it is kind of developing, you know, and as Kate Washington likes to say, that, you know, that immediate plan and the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan. I think it's a lot easier when we get those kind of things along with our, you know, city master plans in place. It's, you know, it gives us something to, you know, plan for with our CIP, but it also, you know, when there's a change in administration or something, it also, you have to, because you had it in a plan, you also have to, you know, make that decision that you're going to go away from the plan, and there are reasons to do that, and every administration does that, but you have to make the decision instead of just, you know, not having, you know, the background, you know, to do that, and parking is certainly one of those issues that will be with us, you know, 10 and 15 years from now, but, you know, what are we doing to make it better, and what are our plans to do that?
Yeah. Michelle writes to us, I feel the same way about old bridges as I do about old barns. They need to be preserved, beautiful and historic. Johnny, you immediately said yes to that. What do you think?
We've been talking a lot since Elizabeth has been here about cities that have great bridges. And looking down, you know, Rochester's riverscape this morning from the vantage point of the beautiful, you know, Bergman 19th floor, you know, area that we were in, it's easy to see the potential for, and I think Louis Stess pointed out, none of our bridges are really lit up the way that they should be. We should be lighting our bridges. We should be celebrating them. We should be fixing them up. Like, we don't have 28 bridges across our river like Pittsburgh, but we certainly can celebrate the ones that we have in a better fashion. And these are things that don't take a huge amount of effort to do, just some thoughtful vision.
I wonder if Mark Johns, the principal landscape architect for Bergman Associates, do you get irked when you don't see proper highlighting and light? Though Freddie Sue always looks good to me at night, but, you know, but would you like to see, do you agree with Johnny on that?
Yes, to some degree. Main Street is lit, and that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful stone historic bridge with the paley railings on, and that is lit, and that is a showcase. And I believe Andrews is lit also as well. So, yes, I do get irked when I don't see, you know, our great architecture, you know, bridges or buildings not, you know, fully displayed as they can be, because by night it's a totally different environment, and it can be just as dramatic at night as it is during the day. So yes, I do, and I think we're doing a good job, but there's always room for improvement.
And you look at that impact that lighting, you know, the Rundell Library has made to downtown. When you're coming, you know, on, you know, 490 going through town, and you see that building lit up, you know, if you could see that for the convention center and the War Memorial, and, you know, those are the ones that, you know, we're thinking about. And, you know, the state did a great job with the Frederick Douglass Susan B. Anthony Bridge. I get teased if I shorten that by city council.
Like I just did, right?
Yeah, no, no, that's fine. You can do that. I shouldn't. But, you know, the state did a great job of number one, making that not just the flat bridge that it was before, putting, you know, the arches on there so it is discernible that you're going over a river at that point, because most people never even knew, you know, prior to that, and lighting it and putting those, you know, touches on it that really make it stand out, and has now become, you know, every picture of the city has that bridge in the foreground. It just seems to have become this thing that people identify Rochester with, and that's what happens when you do those, you know, design and style things that you should be doing with projects.
Let me try to get through a few more questions or comments. Greg, from our website, wxxinews.org/connections, you can find us there. Greg writes to us from the web, "I've long thought that a way to maximize the use of Seneca Park would be to move the zoo parking across the river to the underutilized Kodak parking lot along Lake and put in a tram over the gorge. An elevator into the gorge and a ferry to Charlotte would sweeten the deal. The zoo could expand its footprint into the old parking area, and the pond and trails in the lower park would be preserved." It's an elaborate idea, Johnny, but what do you think?
Well, this is the kind of idea that could have some legs if there were some discussions about it. And I think there are some discussions going on about now the new zoo plan. Maybe this is a good time for citizens to come forward and to start putting these ideas out there so that they can build support for them and suggest things to people who have the ability to act on them from an infrastructure point of view.
What do you think about that idea, Jim?
Well, my easy answer is the zoo is a county facility, I'm not going to take that one. I think Johnny's right. Somebody has to, you know, come out and be a champion for that. And now is the, you know, when you're doing these long-term plans, that's when you set those visions. That's, you know, why we have the trails system along, and we've put money in and are still working on the trail system along the river because it's been in the city plan. And why we did the interloop, it took 20-some years, but those are the reasons those happen, because you get them in a plan early and say, this is the vision, and then you can work and get funding. And it's always easier to get funding from agencies when it's been the city's vision, you know, or the region's vision for a long period of time.
And Bonnie writes to us, "The falls by the Driving Park Bridge are gorgeous, and there's a small park down by the falls. This falls during the snowy, icy winter is even more attractive. The current bridge and fencing detract significantly from the overall appeal. What could be done to truly expose the beauty there?"
Dewey Driving Park Bridge is actually, we have a project to that we're currently working on, working out the funding that will change that existing bridge, redo it, redo the deck, some of the things that need to happen, but as part of that, redo the lighting on that bridge and provide some overlooks which haven't, you know, been there on that bridge to provide those opportunities to get out there. And, you know, there are some beautiful views from across that bridge, and a lot of people use that to get from the east side of the river to the west side, because that's where some of the shopping facilities and those kind of things are. So it's highly pedestrian and vehicle use on that bridge, and so we want to make the pedestrian experience, you know, better.
Let me ask a very ignorant question, but one that when I think about infrastructure and all the needs that are out there across our state, really across the country, Mark, what is being created today, how confident are we that it has a lifespan that is going to be a long time, that's going to be sound? Give me a sense for how the quality sort of the construction has changed and where it is right now.
And you're talking design-wise?
Yeah, design-wise. I mean, we're confident in the structures. They're going to last. I mean, there's always maintenance and repair.
There is. You know, it's very challenging because we have budgets that we have to design to, and we can't always use granite and marble and, you know, the really good materials or longer-lasting materials. But, you know, through proper design choices and value engineering, if you will, I think we're doing a good job in developing projects that have some good lifespan to them and that will look good, mm-hmm. be timeless. Mm-hmm. You know, they won't, they're not, it's not a design style, so that they'll last, you know, 50 years, whatever the lifespan of that project is. So
And, you know, one of the things that's really fascinating about the walkway, you know, built in the bridge built in 1886, 87, 88, 89. So there are bridges that need to be torn down that or structures that need to be torn down that were built in the 70s. And yet you have something like this. And as our society becomes more cognizant and places more value on rebuilding, repurposing, revitalizing, then you can take a structure like the walkway that has a huge percentage of iron compared to the steel, because that's what Andrew Carnegie wanted for the day. That's part of the reason it's so robust today and so strong. Mm-hmm. So we really now can value that and say, well, there may be some other things, you know, that technology has taught us, but those men with their pencils and their mathematic formulas were built a phenomenal structure, and it's worth repairing it. It's worth investing in it because it's something that's lasting and it's something that's celebrating a part of our history.
We are developing more of an appetite for that, but it still is a hard sell. And we go through that a lot when we're doing projects, you know, and trying to support reusing, building on what we have and honoring what we have and seeing the potential of how things can be repurposed for new uses, but incorporating those wonderful designs and concepts that, you know, were originally there and not just wholesale demolishing everything.
Do you want to weigh in, Jim?
No, I agree. You look at, you know, some of the bridges downtown, you know, that were built in the, you know, canal time, you know, our water system. We have pipes in that system that are over 100 years old, but that's because they were made with, you know, thicker steel than, you know, is used today and those kind of things. And so, you know, if you could build every building like City Hall, you know, which was the old federal building, we just spent $7 million fixing the outside of City Hall just to clean up the stone and everything after, you know, over 150 years of use. But that was it, you know. So if you can get that kind of life expectancy, you know, it is, and the train station's another example of that. They had a big, you know, big enough budget to do that. They have terrazzo floors. You know, the money they're going to save on maintenance over time is going to be amazing because they were able to use the right materials in the facility. So it is always that trade-off between your project budget and what the O&M costs are going to be going forward.
Well, the hour has vanished on us. We are out of time, but I want to remind our listeners tonight, you can listen to Elizabeth Waldstein Hart, the Executive Director of Walkway Over the Hudson Organization, meet her, and more on the Reshaping Rochester series tonight. It's 7 o'clock tonight. Tickets $15 at the door at the Gleason Works Auditorium, 7 to 9. Johnny, have fun with that. It's always nice talking to you.
Thank you for
having
us.
And Elizabeth, thanks for visiting Rochester and spending an hour with us on Connections today.
Thanks a lot. I'm really enjoying it so far. Thank you so much.
Mark Johns from Bergman, great perspective. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Jim McIntosh, I'm sure we'll talk Interloop sometime soon.
Thank you.
And parking, it turns out. Parking as well. Short break, and we're right back on Connections.